Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Weather can be unpredictable. Make sure you have the right wipers. Michelin Endurance XD silicone wiper blades last two times longer, available only at Walmart. Dave Wannstedt was the first celebrity Joy Taylor met. He has been everywhere. Bears head coach, still lives in Chicago. Dolphins head coach. Dolphins haven't had a head coach complete four full seasons since Wannstedt left. Won a national championship with Miami as a defensive coordinator. A Super Bowl champ as the defensive coordinator for Jimmy Johnson. They're still good friends, and Dave Wannstedt is joining me. He also covers the Big Ten, as you can see, coach behind it. So, I know, you look like a company guy.
The show starts tonight, 6 o'clock Eastern time, BTN. Tune in, Colin.
Boom, company guy. So, the first 3 weeks, the weather's good. Let's be honest. It's very easy for a quarterback with no preseason to throw it around with wide receivers and tight ends. It's hard for a middle linebacker to practice with middle linebackers and work on his coverage skills. I mean, it looks like to me the defenses are a mile behind, Coach. Can they catch up? Will they catch up?
Yeah, they will. I mean, they'll make adjustments to a degree. You know, obviously, you got to have players. A lot of these teams that are really struggling right now, they've had some severe injuries, I mean, at key positions. But the one thing, when you don't have a lot of practice, and I can revert this back to college days, when you were playing an offense that you really didn't have enough time to practice for, when we were at Miami and we played in Oklahoma, a team that was just as fast physically as us, they were running at a faster speed. And I think you see that a little bit now. The defenses really have been doing much in the offseason, where these offensive guys have been throwing the ball and catching and running, throwing and catching and running. Can't do much on defense. So now we get in here, and I just think that the offenses are doing everything at a faster pace. And don't lose sight of no noise. All these quarterbacks or everybody's just nervous about jumping off sides. It's slowing the defense down to some degree. Quarterbacks can get in the huddle and talk to everybody. They don't have to be wavering. I can't hear it because of the noise. I think the crowd noise is really, lack of crowd noise, is really helping the offenses and particularly the quarterbacks to start as fast as they are.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really, really good point. You know, everybody, it's like, and again, it's like practicing in a stadium. You can do and say what you want and, you know, ad lib to your receivers and backs. So I'm not a big fan of firing coaches in seasons, but this is a long NFL season, and Adam Gase to me wins tomorrow, or I would move off him. What would you do with the Jets head coach?
Oh, you know, the tough thing, and you and I have talked about this, Colin, you know, he was hired for one specific reason, you know, his expertise at quarterback position. And you look at it, and Sam Darnold's in his third year, and he's still inaccurate passer. I don't see that improving. Maybe that won't improve. Maybe that's as much Sam's, you know, inability as it is Adam Gase's play calling. But the problem is you make the big trade, you get Le'Veon Bell. He's been a wash. He hasn't helped you at all. And now you get into that thing where, you know, you lose some games as a coach, but you never lose the team. I think you lose Thursday night, it's been all over. This is a critical win or out game. I don't know how he can recover from that if he doesn't win.
So Lamar is now 0-3 against the Chiefs, and it wouldn't be a big deal except for the Chiefs is probably the team he has to get through. And I do wonder, anytime he trails in a game at half, he's not the same quarterback. And I wonder if it gets into his head a little bit. Was he pressing on Monday night? Had he heard the noise? Oh, no, here's Mahomes. I've got to keep up. He didn't look quite as good. Now, his teammates didn't help him at all. But do you worry that it could get into a quarterback's? I mean, Brady's never lost to Phillip Rivers. The last time they played, Phillip Rivers was pressing and was awful. Is it in Lamar's head at all?
I don't think so, but I'll tell you what, if it is, he better get it out of there quick, because the guys up in the Steel City, the Pittsburgh Steelers, they are, trust me, they're getting better every week, and they're a confident team right now in that division. You know what the biggest shocker to me in that game, and on our Sunday kickoff show, I said I love Baltimore because of their defense. Kansas City, I never thought I'd see this. They, in my opinion, they out-physicaled the Baltimore Ravens. They out-hit those guys. I mean, I'm watching this game, and I'm saying the most physical team in my opinion, was Kansas City up front, the big guys. That was something that I haven't seen a whole lot out of Kansas City, and particularly against Baltimore. Very disappointing.
So, Bill Belichick, you're a defensive guy. Belichick's a great defensive guy. Mahomes is obviously at home against New England. Are there things you think Belichick could or will do to try to at least slow down Mahomes and Kansas City's offense?
Yeah, the first thing that Bill's going to do, and I remember studying this last year, you know, when they played one game, he doubled up on Hill and took Hill out of the game and said, okay, if you got Kelsey, if you want to beat us, the next week it was try to take Kelsey, double him up, and give Hill some plays. So one of the two guys he's going to eliminate, the two most dangerous guys on offense on their team. And then as far as rushing, I don't see him trying to blitz him too much. Bill's not going to let him get the big scramble. Bill's going to try to not get one-on-one and try to give him the easy throw one-on-one for a touchdown. So I think they'll be somewhat conservative up front as much as you can do and get some control pressure. But the big thing is they're going to either take – who are they going to eliminate? They're going to eliminate somebody and make Holmes find the other guy, Mahomes.
So you're in Chicago. Nick Foles has replaced Trubisky. It is of my opinion that Matt Nagy would have preferred to start the season with Foles. No preseason. He goes back to Trubisky. But I never bought I didn't buy last year that Matt Nagy bought in to Mitch Trubisky, but I think the general manager drafted him, and there was some pressure to play him. Do you buy my theory?
To a degree, yes, but also, you know, Ryan Pace, the general manager at the Bears, when they did not pick up Mitch's option year going into this season, and they said, let's just play it out, to me, I sat back and said, oh boy, that's not good. If you look at the history of quarterbacks that the team did not pick up your option year, it's not very good. There wasn't a whole lot of success. So to me, they sent the message right then. And you know what? I don't know if Foles throws a better deep ball than Mitch.
Yeah.
But I don't know how much of a better player he is. But right now, he's given the Bears hope. You know, hope that, hey, if they play lights out on defense, that they can possibly get to the big dance, because Foles has been there and Mitch hasn't. So the biggest thing I think they're getting with Holmes, the quarterback change, is that they're getting hope that they didn't have with Mitch Trubisky. And that's big. I mean, in your mind, you know, with a veteran football team like the Bears got, that means an awful lot.
So we've seen Justin Herbert play. He's been way better than I thought. 700 yards passing in two starts. Joe Burrow hasn't won a game yet. He's tied one, but I think he has been really, really promising. They're asking a lot with a bad offensive line. Tua, who I thought was an A-minus prospect, B-plus, has not played. How would you play this out? Ryan Fitzpatrick has done this before. He can be great for 3 or 4 weeks, but we kind of know what he is. How would you play it out with Tua?
Yeah, I was at Buffalo with Fitz for 2 years, and Fitz is the greatest teammate, and he's winning now. He's playing good. He's high energy. Everybody likes him. But at some point, you know, it's very difficult to pull the string on a guy when the guy in front of him is playing good, but they got to do this. At the end of the day, Tua is their future. And if they go through this whole year and they're not going to be a playoff team, in my opinion, you know, they're not going to win the division. So at this point, I think you got to get Tua in there, whether he plays the whole game or you put him in there in situations and give him a taste. But boy, if he loses the whole year, I think that's really going to put him behind.
All right. Browns are at the Cowboys. Your gut feeling going into the weekend, Cleveland's running second highest percentage of run plays. I know you love that. Your thoughts about Cleveland going to Dallas?
You know what, Dallas, I like Dallas in this game. And the reason being, I think the style right now that Cleveland's playing really fits a defense. You know, Dallas has a problem when you get spread out and you got to run. You know, you got some guys banged up. Their secondary is struggling right now. But Cleveland, I think, is a real good matchup for the Dallas Cowboys defense, because they're going to run it. And you can find ways to gang up on the run. You got to just eliminate the big play with Odell Beckham. I like the Cowboys in this one. I really do. I don't know why. I just, because of the style of offense, that's what I'm basing it on, that they're going to come in and they're somewhat a conservative team, where, boy, you can get focused in as a defense and say, this is what we got to do to win it. And if you get a fanatical effort there at home, I think they can win.
Yeah, Dak's always played better, by the way, at home as well. Dave Wannstedt, Coach Dave, good seeing you. We'll see you Sunday.
Sounds good, Colin. Thank you.
Good stuff. Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
LeBron has done quite a lot during his NBA career, and now he's four wins away from his fourth championship. But after nearly 3 months in the bubble, he says this has been the most difficult time in his basketball career.
Yeah.
Probably been the most challenging thing I've ever done as far as a professional. I would be lying if I sat up here and knew that everything inside the bubble with what it would, you know, the toll that it would take on your mind and your body and, you know, everything else. But it's been extremely tough.
I know people are very cynical about this because
They make a lot of money.
and, you know, make very ridiculous comparisons to what is happening in the bubble to other things in life, which just shouldn't be made.
Right.
But the reality is, this is unprecedented.
Sure.
Yes, they do make a lot of money. My guess is, if they knew every year for the playoffs that they were going to have to go into a bubble away from their home, family, and friends, they'd probably negotiate for more money.
Yeah.
Because it's a very extreme situation. I mean, we just saw a successful hockey bubble. Tampa Bay Lightning won the Stanley Cup championship. All they could talk about was how hard this bubble has been. And that's what the NBA players have been going through as well.
No, yeah,
you saw what happened with the Clippers. There's been tons of conversations about what it does to you mentally and emotionally to be away from your home, to be away from your kids.
We've seen stars voice their opinion, say, I don't like it. Giannis, Paul George. We've had multiple stars say,
who would like it? I think that young guys are probably handling it better than the older guys, but I'm sure they don't love it either. There's nothing really about, let's not even forget that it's not just the players in there. It's their staff.
Right.
It's the training staff. It's the coaches.
The one advantage to the bubble, of course, is no airports, no travel, no driving to the hotel. So I think the energy of the players is...
Yes, it's been much higher.
Yeah, I mean, I think LeBron's playing with an energy he had like 7 years ago. You know, I know they fly these beautiful planes, but it doesn't matter. You still go to 35,000 feet. You come down,
and
you get in the van.
And if you have any kind of injury, you're going to swell up. Like, there's all kinds of things that go into
the energy,
travel.
I think, has been... What this tells me is we should have fewer playoff games. A 3-game first round or a 5-game. Players look tired sometimes. Travel, 7 games. Because the energy in this... The quality of play has been astounding.
It's been tremendous. And you've seen, I mean, incredible offensive performances because of that. But honestly, the defense has been amazing as well. Like, the level of play overall is great. But this is not surprising that LeBron is saying this. And then there's going to be more cynics that are saying, you know, he just wants to build up, that it's an, you know, extra special championship. But I'm just not buying into it.
Yeah.
Like, what the bubble has been... They're going to do documentaries about these and docu-series for years to come about what it was like to be in there. I mean, talking to reporters and people that have been in there, like, you're building your own new home within the bubble. So the bad news for the Cowboys is they've lost two of their first 3 games this season. The good news is the rest of the NFC East is also terrible. But Stephen Jones is not focusing on what the rest of the division is doing. He said on 105.3 The Fan, he's only concerned about the Cowboys getting back on track.
Obviously, we're still very much in the mix. I think we're tied for first place as we sit here right now. So, you know, we just got to go to work. We need to worry about ourselves. We don't need to worry about other people, about other teams. We need to worry about our team. And I think things will take care of themselves.
They also need to work on running the football more. They're passing 66% of the time. And I know their receiving core is great. Their tight end core isn't. They need to establish more up front running the ball.
Well, if you look at Zeke and Dak's rookie season.
Well, that's what they did. That's what they did. Designed Dak runs and Zeke runs. You know, do you know they are, my guys had this. If Zeke runs since he got into the league 15 times or more, I think they're like 38-15 or something.
Now, their offensive line isn't what it was.
That's right.
But sometimes you don't have to, you know, outthink the room. Just because you do have these incredible offensive pieces, if you run the ball more, you're actually going to keep the defense honest.
Yeah.
And then you will be able to utilize those incredible offensive pieces more on the outside. They're tied with the Cowboys, with the Washington football team at 1-2. Eagles, obviously, 0-2-1. And then you have the Giants at the bottom of the division, 0-3. The Dallas' next three opponents are the Browns this weekend, and then the Giants and the Cardinals. So for the second week in a row, the Falcons lost in heartbreaking fashion. It's kind of become their thing. With a 16-point lead in the fourth quarter against the Bears, Atlanta could have burned some clock to secure the win, but the team became aggressive on offense instead, and offensive coordinator Dirk Koetter explained why they decided to take that approach.
Because we were struggling in all areas, our focus was more on we need to try to flip the field here and score another time, not necessarily running out the clock, because if you look at the time when we had the ball, there was still too much time and they had all of their timeouts. So we weren't really in our 4-minute offense mode at that point.
You were up 16 points. How are you struggling in all areas?
No, they do not. Special teams, gaff, coaching gaffes. This is not right now a buttoned up ship.
They were up 39-24 over the Cowboys with just under 8 minutes left in the game.
E-clock. What you do.
You're in full control of the game in every aspect.
Yep.
Just don't blow it. That's their thing these days.
Yeah. The Lions blow a lot of games. The Falcons blow a lot of games. And the Chargers. They're just franchises sometimes that have opportunities and they continually give.
At least with the Chargers, it feels like it's not always kind of their fault.
Right.
Like it's like the football gods just want to sprinkle a little extra bad stuff on them and it's, you know, a missed field goal. With the Falcons and the Lions, it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Live
Lives
News.
In Miami, two-time champ, Chris Bosch. Awesome. Joining us next live.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
When it comes to reaching health goals, it's all about changing your mindsets and your habits. Go to Noom. Free trial today. Noom.com/herd. You guys tell me when Chris Bosch is ready, and then I'll go to him. Oh, he is. Chris is ready. He's going to get into the Hall of Fame. Played 13 years, was an All-Star 11 times, multiple championships. They retired his number one jersey. Great player for the Raptors. He's number two all-time scoring for the Raptors. He wasn't even there that long. He's going to be a Hall of Famer when they can vote. Chris Bosch is now joining us. What's interesting, you know, you've played on both of these kind of teams. You've been on a star-studded team like LeBron and AD, and then you've been on, you know, and then you and LeBron and D Wade, and then you've been on teams in your career where you're the best guy, you're the Jimmy Butler in Toronto, and then you have a bunch of other good players. My gut tells me, Chris, I go with the stars in this league. I know you live in Miami. It does feel like the Lakers, it's their series to lose. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair to say. I mean, let's be honest. I think a lot of people expected the Lakers to be in this position. Not too many people really expected the Heat to be in this position. And yeah, sometimes that does give you a little bit of angst. It can be more pressure on the team with the most to lose. But like I said, they've been here before. They're built very similar, you know, in terms of star power as we were. I mean, three number one picks and Rajon Rondo being the great NBA point guard that he is. But, you know, it's a game and it's a reason that they play the series. And, you know, that's what makes me excited about it. I love storylines. I love seeing guys go out there and playing hard. And I don't think there's no doubt that these are the two best teams in the NBA.
Can you explain the secret sauce with Eric Spoelstra? We didn't think they'd be here. In fact, I didn't. I thought Philadelphia had more talent, Milwaukee, Boston. What does Spoelstra do to elevate? This is a mix of Dragic is old and Bam is young. What is his specialty?
I think just preparation of working every day and understanding what your identity is. You know, everybody talks about the Heat culture and it's beginning to be a buzzword. But when you really get to the core of it, it's really just coming to work every day. It can be as simple as that. But having the mindset to come in and do what you need to do to be successful, you know, having conditioning, being a huge part of the atmosphere in the team, running those 5-on-0 sets and practicing when you do not feel like practicing. Getting that weight room in when you don't feel like it. I gotta, you know, shout out to my guy, Bill Foran, you know, because, you know, it's a team effort in keeping guys together. And it's just those things in the mentality that make really that organization just great. And you see these guys expressing that on the court every night.
You know, I'm really, it's pretty remarkable. Jimmy Butler was starting to get a reputation, and I'm guilty of it. I was like, he's difficult. Then he goes to Miami, and he's the ultimate team guy. And Joey and I have been saying this. You talk about flip the narrative, flip the idea of what he is. How do you think he did it? Because I was starting to think this guy can't get along with teammates. How did he flip it?
Well, I think, you know, sometimes you can rub the people the wrong way when you know a situation isn't right and you're not winning. And that's what I was kind of, you know, alluding to earlier and thinking about. You know, everybody kind of gives Jimmy a tough time. Maybe that's because he wasn't in the situation he wanted to be in.
Yeah.
And he was losing. You know, he seems to be a winner. He is a winner. And he's just a tough-nosed, old-school player. And he's one of those guys that don't mind if you don't like him. You know, he actually thrives in that. And I think that's kind of a lost art in the NBA. But, you know, with that said, he believes they should be there. That team believes they should be there. And I can speak for every NBA player. And if you're watching, you don't get to the championship to lose. You get there to win. So regardless of what the outside perceptions are, they're there to win.
You know, as you get older in life, I'm certainly, this is my life, you get into habits. I like to go home, hang out with the dog, see my wife, see my kids. Young players in the bubble have flourished. A lot of the older players have not. Milwaukee, the Clippers, they weren't as comfortable in the bubble. I think it's been harder for the Lakers because it's a roster of old guys. They got wives and kids and habits and families. I'm kind of blown away by how good the Lakers have been. Are you surprised the ease they moved through the West?
Actually, yes. You know, I think we're all surprised that we didn't get that LA battle that we ended up waiting more than a year for. But, you know, regardless of that, it does seem very difficult, you know, to be in that situation. But when you're trying to win a championship, you know, I have a little bit of experience with it. Things are going to happen that you don't want to happen. You know, it's not so much about whether you want or not. It's about fighting through what you need to fight through to get the, you know, to get the accomplishment and accomplish your goal. You know, I think it does get harder when you're older because you have your favorite restaurant. You know, your bed is a little nicer. I mean, you know, I know me. That the fabrics that I had in my rookie year as opposed to my last year, totally different, you know.
Right.
But you miss those things and you establish your home, you build your home. A lot of guys have children. You have a routine and you're already away enough. And when you're away even more, it can be tough.
Well, you've been such a credit to the game. You're going to get into the Hall of Fame. So it's LeBron against his former team. And you are good friends with LeBron, but you live in Miami. And Joy, the same thing is I'm happy regardless of what happens. But, you know, LeBron's a very interesting personality. He's moved and moved and moved. And I think he's generally made the right decision. When LeBron left you in the Heat, were you mad? Were you anxious? Were you shocked? What was your emotional moment when you heard for the first time?
Oh, hell yeah, I was mad. I was mad, man, you know, but it's a part of the game. And, you know, I've actually told LeBron about that. We talked about it years ago. And I told him, like, yeah, I was mad because, you know, one, you're watching the best player in the world go and play for somebody else. And then two, they're pretty good. You know, I couldn't get mad, too mad at the move. I eventually had to get over it. But, you know, all in all, everybody still had the success that they earned. That year was tough bouncing back. But regardless, it still gave us, I guess it re-sparked the excitement that was going on. I had another chip on my shoulder, another reason to get up out of bed and try to, you know, prolong my career. But, you know, all in all, we talked about it. You know, he's still a great dude. It obviously worked out for him. And it worked out for me as well.
But yes, you know, I was going to say you've had a very good post basketball life, which surprises nobody. You were always one of the more thoughtful. You're a smart dude. You have a music single coming out. in, tomorrow or Friday, you have a music single coming out.
I believe Friday. I've been on the phone all day. It's been super exciting just with the Heat back in the finals and LeBron back in the finals. It's a lot going on. But, yeah, I've been producing music for 4 or 5 years now. So I've been working with some great artists, and we're really, really excited about the product that that we're putting out and that we have.
Chris, I love having you on the show. You are one of the best guys this league has ever had. I just love when you come on, and thank you so much, and enjoy yourself.
I appreciate it. And I got a book coming next year, so I'm going to make sure I send you guys a copy.
Please do. We'll read it, and we'll promote it. Thanks, man.
I appreciate you, man.
Chris Bosh, great high school, college, pro player. By the way, I've said this for years, that Miami team, I thought it was the smartest team in NBA history. Haslam, Wade, Battier, LeBron, Bosh. We never think about it. Go look at the Bad Boy Pistons. How many of those guys were GMs and coaches? This league is hard, and you get into this situational basketball. Look at the success how many of the Lakers have had, the Pistons had. Larry Bird's a GM. Kevin McHale's a GM. So, Rondo, high IQ. Kevin Garnett's on TV. Paul Pierce is on TV. Ray Allen could be if he wants, but he's on a golf course somewhere. That Miami team was unique because it was flawed. They didn't have a center. They were small. Joel Anthony was 6'8". LeBron, their point guard position was Mario Chalmers, but it was LeBron. They didn't rebound particularly well. And LeBron and D-Wade almost had the similar games. They weren't perfect together, like a Shaq and Kobe, a big man and a perimeter player. To me, it was the most functionally innate, intelligent basketball team ever. In situations, they were just absolutely superb.
Well, Chris kind of alluded to it there when you asked him about Spoelstra, but role players and the right role players who buy into their roles are really what makes championship organizations, because your stars are going to do what your stars are going to do. Yeah. But if you have a system and a culture that supports role players and allows role players to do what they do best,
yeah,
it doesn't matter how flawed the team is, because they're going to rise and do what they need to do when you need them. Ray Allen, Mike Miller, Shane Battier.
They even brought in Birdman on a 10-day contract. Yes. Like everybody had, they were very patriot-like, very smart. Yep. Everybody had a role. Do your job. And it was a fascinating flaw. It wasn't the Warriors, like you're like, that could be the best team ever. MJ Bulls, that's the best team ever. It wasn't that. It was like smart, really won the moment all the time. Check it out, mdrivefromn.com, mdrivefromn.com supplement. Get lean. See you tomorrow.